Hey guys, and welcome back to an episode of Comic Book Legion Podcast. Of course, I am one of your hosts, Clay, and of course, I am here with Mark. What's up, Mark?
What's going on, dude?
Yes, so this week was full of highs and full of lows, but before we get into that, let me just say some news hit this weekend. Well, I say this weekend, but it's like in the middle of the week. We got a small tease from, I believe it was Gary Frank first, right?
It was, what a tease it was.
Which character was it?
Cosmic Boy.
It was Cosmic Boy. See, yeah. I always get confused because I'm not used to seeing the bubble over his head.
Yes.
I'm from the moment I have seen him in comics to being reiterated in that old school Legion of Superheroes Kids WB cartoon, he never had the bubble, so I'm not used to it. But it was
Cosmic Boy. I feel safe saying that it is Cosmic Boy, but sometimes, like, if you don't see little intricacies, it's kind of tough to know who it could possibly be.
Mm-hmm.
Because Gary Frank does have he is an incredible artist, one of the best artists that there is in comics. A lot of his facial expressions and characters could look a little similar.
Yes.
So it's kind of like, honestly, it could be anybody in like a bubble helmet.
Uh-huh.
But I mean, I think it's safe to say, and then with Brian Michael Bendis, not that many hours later, with the hashtag Long Live the Legion, I'm like, come on, bro. Whoa, what are you doing here? Is this, are we getting a new Wonder Comics imprint here? Like, I need a JSA and a Legion book. Like, that's a must.
It wouldn't make sense, just because of if they are putting the Legion back kind of where they were. The Legion of Superheroes were a futuristic, like, Titans or Teen Titans, but on a Justice League type scale. But as far as we know, you know, Bendis claims that everything that happens in the Wonder Comics and the Young Justice title and his Wonder Twins title, he says all of this is continuity, but until they actually start integrating those characters into the regular imprint of DC, it's kind of hard to believe. So I would like for Legion to be a regular DC imprint, but I can completely understand if it was a Wonder Comics imprint.
If it is, since we already have Matt Fraction doing Jimmy Olsen, can we have, like, I would love for Matt Fraction, and I know people like Doc Shaner, I think he talks about, like, I guess the amount of work it would take to just draw, like, let's say the Legion or like the JSA because of the amount of people on the roster.
Oh yeah,
didn't he come into DC exclusively doing the Hanna-Barbera like Future Quest, which was a huge roster? Where I'm like, dude, that to me, because Matt Fraction is one of my favorite writers. Like, this is going back to like when he was on Invincible Iron Man, and then what he did with Hawkeye. Freaking awesome. Now he's doing Sex Criminals with Zdarsky, which is good as well. So I would, knowing that I believe he's doing Olsen, I would love to see him on one of these books with, like, Shaner's art.
You know, you're right. You know, it would be a almost iconic George Perez Crisis on Infinite Earths level of art. So I could definitely understand if they were to choose somebody like that. Of course, I will always love Brett Booth's Legion, but I understand just because he parted ways with DC, of course, we probably won't see him for a while. But I don't know, dude. I would love John Boy Myers. If John Boy Myers were to get on the Legion as well, with those vibrant colors, would be amazing. I would love John. At least give him covers. If not the interior art, give him colors. I mean,
yeah, there's something about Doc Shaner that, like, again, this is not exact, but for some reason, when I see his work, for some reason, I think of, like, Darwin Cook.
Yeah.
I don't know why. Maybe it's, like, kind of, like, the color, the way that the coloring's done on his work, but I just put them together. So that's why when I see his work, it always makes me think of, you know, like New Frontier and all that kind of stuff. And, like, oh, man, this is like happy times.
This isn't a knock on his art style, but it's I was just going to say it's the...
Choose your words carefully, Spartan.
Well, I was just going to say it's the lack of detail. And it's not that it's, like, bad. It's the fact that he doesn't go intricately into, like, wrinkles of shirts or, you know, heavy on the face. It's very simplistic, like Cook was. So I definitely see the relation between the two. So
I forgive you. I was about to throw my laptop on the floor. this week in terms of news, I think all of us, at least at Comic Book Legion on our chats, we've all been really pumped. I know some of us have been really excited about Heroes in Crisis coming out this week. And we have different opinions on the book, which we'll get to later on. Our team has different opinions in terms of a book, which is kind of normal with King. His work is usually polarizing, where you're not down the middle. You're either on a love it, or I feel like his work is never it's okay for some reason. I don't
that
know
is
if
true.
We just. I feel like either we've put him on that scale and we just don't know how to break the mold, or that's just literally what he does. He makes you, like, love it or hate it, and it gives you those two complete different sides of the spectrum where you're not getting, like, these neutral opinions or whatever.
Yeah.
But this week was tough for us, and I think it's for both of us, because it was kind of funny. Like last week, when you were reading the books, you were like, man, you know, I didn't get a chance because, you know, Titans, like, I mean, Teen Titans and the Deathstroke, that Terminus Agenda has been a pretty, and for us, a pretty mediocre event.
Mm-hmm.
Many of these little crossover events. And this week, for some reason, besides the books that we're going to discuss, I had literally zero interest in wanting to read any of them.
Yeah, I opened up Batgirl. And I started to read it, and then I got hooked on the art and just, like, flipped through the pages of the art. And I was like, oh, this is a pretty decent book. There's a panel or two that I was like, that doesn't really look right. And then I went to Batman Beyond because I really liked the last issue, and I just couldn't get into that one. I don't read – what other books were there this week?
I mean, like, Goddess Mode I haven't read. I'm, like, two issues behind on Freedom Fighters. Honestly, Justice League Dark and Justice League Odyssey, I've kind of, like, fallen off the... Well, definitely with Odyssey.
Yeah.
But Justice League Dark, I think I'm, like, three issues behind.
I have
the
not...
Flash, I know, we've talked about The Flash last week, that I'm waiting until year one.
Which is should be next issue.
Yes. Should be. Because so. This was the end of, like, that Trickster thing. I was like, I had enough of the Trickster when he was, like, roided out.
Yeah.
With the Strength Force or whatever it was, and I'm like,
Well, let me stop you, because I will say, if Dan Mora, like he is on the covers, if he had done the interior art, it would have been a lot easier to read. I attempted...
Well, Scott Collins has a history of having very... His art style is kind of like Bendis with his exposition. Where there's just a lot going on.
Yeah, I can understand that.
I mean, I bought the issue of Flash because of the Mitch Gerards, the B cover.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, I mean, I got that, but it's, I don't know. I'm just, these kind of stories, I feel like they're just happening because they're trying to buy time for everything else to catch up. And
speaking of both Doc and Mitch, can we just talk about this wonderful Terrifics cover this week?
That is pretty great. I love how it's like it's actually a real picture, but the only part that he drew is kind of like the computer screen, but the little Mitch Gerards that little what? Sticky note there
with the
and he pulled like a Bendis where he's like Bendis really seems to love these like on the sticky notes.
Yeah, I really enjoyed that. But just the conversation that Doc and Mitch had on Twitter when this was first released, amazing. I love their interactions. I can't wait to see what Mitch does.
Oh, for sure. And the thing with them is, I don't know why, but I've been because, you know, Twitter is kind of like, depending on how you decide to search, it can kind of determine the mood that you're in. But I've kind of done, I think it was after like the second episode that we've done together when you were mentioning about like just following creators. Uh-huh. And like following, man, just following what they post has made Twitter so much more fun. Like ignoring people's hot takes that I truly believe that 90% of them, they don't even believe it. They just know what gets clicks. And then secondly, like the comment section, I don't even read the comment sections anymore because that's really bad. But just following the interactions between these creators, the little things that they tease, man, it's been very, very liberating.
Mm-hmm.
Like I was talking to Kevin on DM and he was like trying to show me, I guess, what people are talking about with Heroes in Crisis. But on Reddit, I'm like, dude, I've never been on Reddit. I heard Reddit was worse than Twitter.
Oh, yeah. It's super toxic. I've tried to go on Reddit. Like,
I've
maybe
never.
Once or twice.
I wouldn't even know how to. I wouldn't even know how to like navigate because I've never been on it.
It's terrifying. Don't do it.
OK. I'll take your word for it.
I tried to go like more so for like because every once in a while DC will have somebody go like a creator go onto their Reddit and like talk. But I'm like, why do that? Like you. I feel like there's a bigger space on Twitter to do that instead of Reddit, just because Reddit is known for its toxicity. And I feel like Twitter is getting to that point, but it's just like, why Reddit? Like, why? Like,
yeah, so. I don't know. I've never done it, and I'm not planning on doing it. Anyways, let's go on. Let's get into a high note. Let's talk some comic books because there is a book here. That is, I can say a consensus is probably our favorite book of this week, which is Dial H for Hero, number 2, by Sam Humphries, Joe Quinones on art. When I read this book, the first thing that came to my mind was when I was seeing this moment when the operator is on the phone. I don't know if you saw my tweet.
Oh, yeah.
All I can hear is Jeff Goldblum.
So I was skimming through the book first, and I saw a part that I was definitely interested in. I was like, okay, I have to read this book first. But before I read it, I went on Twitter, and I saw that post of yours. I totally agree.
Now, I don't know if this is because of what we've seen Jeff Goldblum in Thor Ragnarok. I don't know if this is... But for some reason, when I saw the look, I saw even like the white beard, but I was like, dude, even with the glasses, it just looks like Jeff Goldblum. And I can just hear his voice. I mean, I'm not even going to try to do a Goldblum impersonation because that's impossible. But yeah, man, I thought this book again, when looking at this book, I realized I forgot how great the colors were.
Mm-hmm.
With like the purple. It was, to me, I was like, oh god, this book is so pretty. But anyways, getting to a brief rundown of what this story is, you got Miguel. Miguel in the first issue was introduced to the phone. You got a little bit of his backstory with him pretty much almost dying. Superman saved him. He's been trying to find that Rush. He was introduced to the phone, and now he became, do you remember what his monster truck, name was?
No, I hold on.
Monster truck head or something like that?
I have it right here. Hold on.
Okay.
Because it should.
Yeah, well, while you're getting it, this is him now, that he's now hanging out with Summer. They've left the small town that they were a part of, and he keeps on getting a phone call from the phone, but he keeps on ignoring it. He wants nothing to do with it. And you kind of find out a little later on the reasons why he's been trying to not answer it. But in the meantime, because he did answer the phone and immediately hang it up, now we have, not only do we have the operator, but now we have the Thunderbolt Club. We got other people who are there, and they are interested in getting it, which is, so Mr. Thunder. Mr. Thunder, who is like the bad guy in, I guess, the world where the operator is in, he is pretty much telling the people, retrieve the phone, but do not open it. Like, do not use it. You cannot use it. Because obviously you know that he probably wants to have that power. But no matter what happens, something happens where Miguel throws it in the water because he wants to get rid of it. And this is when we get introduced to our first of, I hope that this is a theme where Sam Humphries is creating these crazy, crazy anime or 90s style origin stories. And I think this one we got introduced to Jobu, the Zonkey King.
Yes.
Dude.
So
this was great.
For one, on the first issue, his name was just Monster Truck. That's what it was.
Oh, Monster Truck. Okay.
Yeah. So on this book, on issue number 2, let me just say, I am probably one of the biggest fans of Dragon Ball Z. I'm a huge fan of Dragon Ball Z. I don't know if you are.
I have never, to be honest with you, I don't think I have ever seen an episode.
Okay.
But I will say this. I did buy for the PlayStation 2, because this was just something that everybody was buying. I think it was called Dragon Ball Z, like Saga. Or it was like the first open world.
Okay.
There was an open world. I'm forgetting. I don't know why I thought it was Saga. But it could be something else.
I think that it was like a... Man, what was that game? Oh, yeah, it was Saga. Yeah. I remember that game.
Saga,
yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I bought that game because everybody was doing it, but I didn't know anything of what was going on. So yes, I know nothing of Dragon Ball Z.
So this character, this Zonkey
Jobu?
King, Jobu the Zonkey King, is the story of the main character of that show, Goku. This was basically him... but instead of a ape-esque hero, it's a donkey, which I thought was hilarious. I love the fact that the art completely changed.
Yes.
To a manga-type book. There was also his attacks, like this little like hand beam thing was the exact same way that they do it in the show. Absolutely love this book, dude. I cracked up laughing. My wife thought I was insane. But this was such a fun book. I love the way that, like, even in the regular manga books, whenever there's a bullet shot or whatever, like, nothing really happens. Like, they just, like, bounce off people. But this... And so when I had a theory, and I still have one, the reason why Thunderbolt doesn't want these people to actually use the dial is because how this guy is acting, the one who used the dial H, is because it's addictive. And
yes.
he says that to, who's the main character's name again?
Miguel?
Miguel. Sorry, I almost said Marcus. No, but he tells Miguel, like, you'll want to use it again. You will. Like, this is something that just takes over your life. So, Thunderbolt knows that if these people keep using it, it's going to be harder and harder to take. So, that's the theory that I have. But also, when Miguel uses the Dial H, and it becomes like this, again, anime style... But the cover for that, and it shows, like, the old DC logo, and it says, like, DC manga, and this guy is named Iron Deadhead.
Dude, all I thought of was Mechadet U.
Yeah.
So that was the thing, like, because now when you were saying about that this was, like, an homage to like, Dragon Ball Z, I was like, dude, I wonder, is this, like, now an homage? I mean, I don't know what Sam Humphries has with Boom Studios. I don't know if they have any kind of relationship or if they've done something. But when I saw this, I'm like, dude, this looks just like... and now Miguel... Yes, Miguel is Hispanic in this. And then I think... I don't know if it was... I don't remember the nationality. But in Mech Cadet U, you had Stanford U. That was the boy who was kind of like, you know, down on his luck. His mom's just like the janitor. And now... Or custodian. And now... He ends up finding this mech, and now, you know, I don't know if you've read the book, but anyways, he ends up getting, like, this relationship with this mech, and I'm forgetting the name of what the robot's name was, but, I mean, this one looks a lot more, the other dude looked a lot more scrawny in Mech Cadet U, But when you were looking at all the other different mechs that they were introduced to, I was like, dude, this looks just like that. So I was kind of like, oh, man, I wonder if this was.
And let me just say, this book knows exactly what it is. Like,
yes.
Just like how you can say that like a Deadpool book knows exactly what it is, this knows exactly what it is. So it starts the secret origin, and it even says, like in a little caption, you know what this means, cut to the thrilling secret origin. And it starts to do it, but Miguel,
like, we don't have time for that.
Yeah, Miguel like squashes the panels, and he's like, there's no time for a secret origin. And then he starts fighting Jabu. So good. I love this so much.
But the cool thing is that you're talking, when you were mentioning the part with Jobu, the Donkey King, it looks very anime,
mm-hmm.
which is kind of like what you're talking. But what I love is that now they're saying DC manga, and manga is normally black and white.
Yeah.
So you're literally seeing the battle between like anime and manga in colors, but then the manga characters in black and white.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh my gosh, this is amazing. Like, I didn't get the correlation because I don't know Dragon Ball Z, but uh-huh. I do know, I have an idea of like anime, so I kind of know like the features and kind of like the action sequences. So seeing them together, that's what made the book like top notch for me. On top of it being really funny, I love the how it's kind of like what you're saying. It knows what it is. It's not scared to go weird uh-huh. and go wacky. Just have fun with the book.
Mm-hmm.
And Humphreys, I believe, is probably one of the best writers to do that.
Yeah,
because that, I mean, if you watch like DC Daily, I mean, he's like a eccentric dude. Like, he's quirky. Like, that's kind of like his style. Like, his reading and his dialogue matches like his personality, which is something that I love. So, I mean, we'll see what happens, because now that cop that came in between the book that you were introduced to, you know, it looks like she is also part of the Thunderbolt Club, and now she's the one that has the phone in possession. And again, Mr. Thunder, he is he's mentioning again to her, like, don't use it. But then yeah. It teases us, letting us know that of course she's going to use it, because we need to be introduced to another amazing secret origin story.
Exactly. And one thing to really hit here is both Summer and Miguel in this book were very, you know, at odds, and they were bumping heads throughout this entire book. And that's kind of the reason why this whole thing goes down. Miguel is not usually the kind of person to really run away from home. And
mm-hmm. And Summer is.
And Summer very much is, you know. Yeah. And they even say, like, how many times have you ran away from home? But that was the entire reason. He didn't want this responsibility of the phone, so he threw it away. And, you know, he was just going to, you know, try to find his way back home. But, of course, Summer, just, you know, feeling really bad about the entire situation, decided to go back. That's how she kind of helps out Miguel, by hitting Jobu. And that's when they, unfortunately, misplace the phone. And that's how the police officer gets it. So, mm-hmm. really, really enjoyable. I love the amounts of art that's in this, because like you said, yes. it changes constantly to fit the hero.
Yeah.
And I don't want them to stop that. Like, I'm sure I would love the art style of how the book starts with Jobu,
mm-hmm.
or with this Iron Deadhead or whatever, but just the way yeah. they decided to take it with the old school mangas and the newer mangas where it has color, I really, really enjoyed it.
100%. Like, this book, I mean, it's definitely deserving of all the, like, the hype that it's been getting. And I hope, I mean, this is Wonder Comics, so I'm sure there's probably, this might be like a mini, mm-hmm. but so far I'm digging it. I think it's been great. And it was actually, believe it or not, this book, I mean, I don't know what book we're going to talk about next, whichever one you want to lead to, but normally I usually read like the biggest comic that's out, because I can't contain myself from not wanting to read it.
Uh-huh.
But this one actually, Dial H, the first issue, made such an impression on me that this was the first book that I read.
Nice.
And I'm glad I did, because it was kind of like that real high. So if you ever felt a damper with the other books after. It, you know, I guess it would just put you, you'll still be on a high because you can kind of remember how good that one was. But what's the next book you want to talk about?
Next book I want to talk about is one that I'm not very fond of. But, you know, this is the book that I keep reading. It's always on the top of my list. Not the very first, but it's usually within the first two. Just because I want it to be good. I want it to be good, and I just pray that, you know, this will be it. This is where it turns around. That issue being Action Comics number 1010, the Lois and Clark Agents of Spiral.
Okay.
Let me all just right, say, because so... you made this comment on Twitter, and I will also make it here. That first cover, I love Francis Manapul. I love his art style, but yeah. I don't know who was on the first cover.
Steve Epting?
Yeah, Steve Epting is amazing. I love this cryptic look for what, you know, Leviathan is supposed to be. I love the colors on this. Absolutely love it. That's what kind of caught my eye when Leviathan first started to, you know, show up in like solicitations and everything. I was like, oh man, that cover looks so good. And of course, the first panel is still something that it goes along with the story, but it's also one of those things that Bendis does, you know, with the notepads and everything else. But this is just
do you think that this is do you think this is his way of, because you know the Marvel way in comics is always to do a recap. Do you think that this is his way of being able to be like, okay, let's kind of use little subtle things that recap, but also little things to tease, but we can kind of all put this towards like the journalistic side?
I think so, because if you remember, I think it was 1001 and 1002, they actually had a previously or something like that. But since then, it's been gone. So I think that I would definitely agree with you on, okay, you know, it says here, Superman, Batman, Wonder Woman, Green Lantern, you know, all the people of Justice League, talking about Spiral, remembering Cobra, Task Force X. We know that's been a big part of the story, for some time now. DEO, we can't forget, you know, that the DEO was completely destroyed. And... Mm-hmm. You know, his, I don't know Bendis' obsession with Adam Strange, but we will for sure learn it eventually.
Well, I don't know if it, I think it's just that Adam Strange is probably the most well-known person from Ran. And I think that because of now everything that he's going to be doing with Naomi, which, you know, Naomi, again, it is his and Jamal Campbell and David Walker. That's like their creation. So I feel like he's going to be doing a lot of things to kind of tie that stuff together. So I feel like even in his other books, you're going to be getting this because I feel like it will only help a flagship title like Superman, like Action Comics, would only help boost this new character that's coming, you know, up and coming and will, you know, hopefully become something kind of like what Miles is now at the Marvel Universe.
Yeah, for sure.
So, I mean, I think it's smart to do the small little connections. But I could just be wrong, and maybe he just absolutely loves Adam Strange for, you know, just loving him.
You know, I wasn't really informed enough about the DEO other than, you know, what I've learned through the CW shows and everything else. But recently I read, I think it was a book that it was a JSA trade that had a lot of classic stories written by Geoff Johns and all these other writers, but it showed Director Bones. And we see here Director Bones, is he was the one that was kind of scribbling all over this paper, and he's meeting up with this agent, and they're talking. And I will admit, Bendis's writing here was really good.
I thought that was the most powerful opening sequences where I'm like, I actually felt bad for Bones.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Like, honestly, if this... I could see this being an opening to a TV show. Like, mm-hmm. just because you get it legitimately before the title, you know, before the title card and everything.
Yeah, it's a credits. Good prologue.
Yeah. And, you know, we see this this person talking to Director Bones, and then Director Bones is like, oh, you're Leviathan. You're here to kill me, aren't you? Like, you're here to finish the job. And she looks really sad, kind of like, how would you ever think that? And then smiles, and I'm like, oh, God.
Yeah. Like, now, when her face, like, changed, is that Talia?
I thought it was.
Okay.
I thought it was. Now, I still think it can be. But with how things are going and what we learned here, I'm not sure if that's the thing. Because, you know, we quickly see, I was going to say Lois and Clark, but Chaz and Andy.
Oh, God.
Flying into London to meet their contact.
Yeah, like their liaison. Yeah.
Yes. So we learn that their liaison is Tiger. And if nobody knows who Tiger is, I highly recommend you read Grayson from the New 52.
Yeah, Tim Seeley and Tom King.
Or reading Nightwing on Rebirth, the first, like, 20 issues. 25.
Yeah, because you had Tiger, and then they introduced, what was his name? Like, was it Rapture?
Yeah,
they introduced
Rapture.
Somebody. Yeah, Rapture, and then which was good. Yeah. Rapture was a cool villain.
I really want to see him come back.
Yes, me too. So seeing when I saw Tiger, I was like, all right, this is really cool. I liked everything that happened. You get the introduction again. You see that big. I mean, here you get a little bit of a better view of this doomsday bot looking villain. And you got to see its eyes. You could see that it has, like, this, you know, this cube or whatever it is, like, in the middle. Mm-hmm. That one's a little bit... I was starting to think. I was like, man, who is this? Like, what is this? But it kind of felt like... And I remember I was mentioning it on our chat. I was like, man, what a gorgeous panel seeing, like, you know, Chaz get the, you know, the classic look, like, rip the shirt. You get the Superman S, the flying. But there's something about when you see him grab that mech robot, and like seeing the waves, the way that that like the force of the speed that they're going, I'm like, dude, if it wasn't for his hair and his beard,
dude,
I would absolutely love this panel.
I would look for that original art and put it like as my phone background. I love that, but I look through it and then I see that beard and those lamb chops, and I'm just like, I can't do it. I mean,
we do know that one of our contributors says that that looks exactly like him, so he's digging the look. So I'm glad that you liked it. For us, see, the thing was that this whole Andy and Chaz thing, it felt very like, you know, they made it seem like it's going to be a really big deal. Like, we're going to go out and do some stuff. No, they literally walked into, like, a bookstore. Tiger's there. Superman comes to save the day. Chaz is Superman?
Yeah, he literally just opens his jacket and everything, like, right in front of him.
Not only that, but that, like, Tiger was, like, getting ready to kill them. And now he's like, I feel like Clark 100% just put Lois in the absolute worst position ever. And then, you know, now he gets back, and of course, you know, it's kind of like you see his essence where he has now, like, that blue, so I wonder if that's going to do something.
Mm-hmm.
To actually Clark. But now it's like Lois is gone. Where's Tiger? Oh, no. No bueno. I mean, but it does mention that Leviathan will be revealed next, which I don't believe that's true, because I think, aren't they doing like a Leviathan one-shot?
Yeah.
Like an actual... Well,
they're doing a mini-series on Leviathan. So I don't think it'll be... I think Leviathan, as far as like the group making its announcement, will be revealed. But I think nothing like really, I guess, earth shattering or you know, head turning will happen until that miniseries this summer.
Now, do you think that Jimmy Olsen's right that Amanda is part of Leviathan? Because I mean, honestly, in that whole interaction between him taking 10,000 pictures of her face, I feel like the only thing that's worth noting about that whole part was him saying, you're Leviathan, aren't you? And you're just kind of just playing all this off.
Yeah, what he said is, oh, you know, you're Leviathan. You acted like you were in danger, so that way he would take you here. No, but I do see Amanda Waller herself doing that. Like, I see the leader of Task Force X doing, you know, finding a way to get into the fortress. Because from as far as I know, and in other reiterations of the DC universe, whether that be pre-New 52, New 52 or now, like, nobody has really gone into the fortress other than people that Superman has willingly said, hey, let's get in here. And that's very few. You know, John, Lois, Steel, Supergirl, Superwoman in New, at the beginning of Rebirth, Batman, Flash, you know, actual heroes. Nobody in these secret organizations have really gone to the Fortress of Solitude for the reason, hey, you're a secret, you know, organization that feeds upon being able to either blackmail people or share information. And yeah, the Fortress of Solitude is high, high futuristic technology that Earth doesn't necessarily need to have. So.
Yeah, for sure. No, so. I hear you, man. So, overall, I mean, the book looks absolutely gorgeous. And it was funny because I was, like, reading this and I'm like, dude, did Steve Epting work with Brubaker? Because I feel like I'm reading Captain America. Like, my brain immediately went to, like, in my opinion, when Marvel was, like, at its top, like, at its peak during that time. Mm-hmm. And Brubaker's doing his Captain America run with Bucky. And I was like, man, this looks exactly like it. And so then I asked the guys, and luckily, I think it was Comics Dude that's the one that mentioned. And he's like, yeah, like, they worked on that run. I was like, I knew it. Because this art's just gorgeous. And I think that, you know, Bendis has been very blessed to have the artists that he has. Like, they're pretty great. So what Steve Epting has done, what Adam Hughes has done, what Ryan Sook has done, with what Ivan Reis has done, Shaner has done some stuff. I mean, like, I'm like, dude, can it get any better than this lineup that this guy has? Like, it's incredible. So right now, I'm kind of happy that this Chaz and Andy thing is over, because I didn't want it to last long. But, I mean, I think the way it was executed was poorly done. But the story, I'm still really interested and intrigued with what this Leviathan is and what's going on in this realm. I still think that the Action Comics is the stronger book, because this whole Jor-El, Mr. Oz, and, you know, that stuff that's going on there, I don't really care for it, mm-hmm. to be honest with you. I feel like I've kind of lost my interest in what's going on with John, because I don't know why. I mean, I loved him in Super Sons and everything that was happening, like, at the earlier start, with, you know, Superman and on Action Comics. But now, I don't know. I mean, I feel like Bendis has a knack. I mean, because his stuff that he's doing with Young Justice is good. And with Naomi is good. With these younger characters, I don't know why. This Jonathan doesn't feel like the same Jonathan we've always been reading.
Mm-hmm.
And for him, if it hasn't felt it hasn't felt like a long time that you haven't seen him.
Yeah.
So
no.
Since it hasn't been a long time for him, you would think he would still have kind of like a characteristic, but I don't know. It just doesn't seem the same.
Yeah, I've read some theories of, you know, like you had said, I hope that Oz isn't really Jor-El. There's a lot of theories that this older John is not necessarily the John that we all know and love. So I'd be interested to see if that's the case. I mean,
if that's the case, great. Give me Superboy Prime.
Yeah.
I want Superboy Prime.
I heard that, I'm pretty sure Bendis himself has said that he will eventually get to Superboy and John meeting and what that will mean. You know, the really big thing now is that both Superboy and, so Connor Kent and Tim Drake on the Wonder Comics Young Justice are both getting new superhero names. I'm not cool with that, but we'll see.
Yeah, I know that you were. So when you were mentioning that about Tim Drake, were you mentioning that it has to be Red Robin?
I For me, if it's not Red Robin, I don't know what
Robin.
I don't know how I'll feel about it. Just because the way the synopsis says it, kind of feels very stuck up. And for somebody to say, "Hey, my word is definitive, and it's gonna be here forever, and DC can't change it," like, I feel like that's very arrogant in a way. Because in the solicits, it says, "Oh, Tim Drake will do the one thing that he always does, change his name, but this time it will be, like, forever." And so just the way that was worded, I was just like, yeah, I'm not for this already. So,
yeah, I could see that kind of, like, being condescending. To me, I feel like, whatever, I think that stuff's always going to change. They're just trying to, I mean, I don't think, well, you never know. I mean, who knows what kind of power DC, because DC has definitely given Bendis a lot of power.
Mm-hmm.
Because Bendis has the knack to be able to do a lot and do a lot of world building. And considering that Johns has been on a lot of the other entertainment stuff, he's always been that guy that does the world building, and pretty much the universe is kind of surrounding the events that he's kind of taking part in. So mm-hmm. I don't know if they have given Bendis the keys to, you know, the world, like what they've given Johns, but it kind of seems that way. If that's the case, I don't know, then I'm kind of with you, that I wouldn't want that, because I'm happy that they brought him over, but I wouldn't want it to be in the sense that he's going to be what Scott Snyder was for, like, New 52, and what Geoff Johns has been for DC the last 15 years.
That's true.
Yeah, so time will tell. But talking about, well, I don't know. I have no idea which book you want to talk about next.
Well, let's go ahead. The next book that we have is Detective Comics 1002.
Okay.
This book, I'm loving the art. I will never stop saying that, just because.
I got the BVS beef cover, by the way.
So did I. So did
yeah,
I.
That armored Batman suit is probably, I mean, say what you want about the movie, but I don't think anyone can deny that suit was not badass.
The Brooks covers are always amazing to me. I absolutely love them.
Yeah.
But the interior art, too. Let me just say that his name is, it's
Brad Walker.
It's Walker. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. He did the Aquaman while you were reading it in Rebirth.
So Brad Walker, a lot of people apparently aren't a big fan of it. I love the eye shields that he does for both Batman and Robin in this issue. But in this issue, we get, like, right exactly where we were at the end of 1001, inside the park still, where, you know, this fight between Batman and all these knights are. And the Arkham Knight comes out, of course, at the end of the 1001. And all of a sudden, police get involved. And I didn't realize this until this issue. There's civilians just watching this thing go down.
Yeah, I didn't notice that the first one, but I did see this one where you saw with Batman and Arkham Knight later on, kind of like on a standoff, and you see a couple of people with, like, their phones out. I was like, wait, this is a little too, like, what's going on here?
So the really big thing to get from this interaction was that when the police arrive, everybody starts shooting, the knights start shooting their arrows, and the Arkham Knight is like, no, this is not what was supposed to happen, and a misfire that was going to shoot another police officer, like a police officer accidentally misfired and was going to shoot another officer, the Arkham Knight jumped in front of it and saved them. And
which Bruce realized.
Yeah, Batman realized that. And then all of a sudden, that's when you get the standstill. You see the Arkham Knight have his, like, they look like small sun stars. Like,
mm-hmm.
just like how Batman has his batarangs between his fingers. You have the police officers, and you have these knights with their bows and arrows. And it's like this for, like, three or four panels, and then you see those civilians with the phones. And that is totally how people would react today. No one runs away. They're like, oh, this needs to – I need to take a picture of this. But bullets are flying around? Okay, cool. Let me just stand right here.
The thing that gets me with, like, the civilians, though, considering the way that – because once Bruce, you saw he was – I mean, you got to give him props because his adrenaline must have been running really high that he was able to still do everything, because once the Arkham Knight left and he just collapsed into Gordon's arms and he was able to get back to the – into
the Batmobile.
Back to the cave. Yeah, the Batmobile. And, you know, then you see Damian. Damian's doing some recon work, and he ends up getting caught by the Arkham Knight. But what you happen to see here is that you see... you see the Mad Hatter. You see Hugo Strange. You see Solomon Grundy. I mean, you're seeing some of these villains that it looks like they're in contact with the Arkham Knight. It kind of makes me wonder if you're getting a little bit of a White Knight, like the whole White Knight version, where it's like people were supposed to see the White Knight. I mean, this Arkham Knight actually saved the policeman because he's not truly the villain in this story.
Uh-huh.
And they're painting it because you even hear him saying that. He's like, it's kind of like if you were the one that Gotham has been a hostage and you were the kidnapper.
Yep.
So I feel like this could be something, because I'm like, dude, if you were really like protecting cops and, you know, there's something going on with you, I feel like you wouldn't be in contact with these really, you know, bad, bad villains.
Yeah.
So now in Batman's eyes, you're going to be like, oh, dude, okay, this person might not be that bad. But then you see who he's talking with. You know, we'll have to see. But you had, I didn't honestly... Because we have on our chat, we have like a spoiler chat, so you kind of have to be careful with our general stuff and like our spoiler stuff. So you posted this pic, and I guess I kind of saw it, but since there was so much dialogue beforehand, mainly because of Heroes in Crisis, I didn't read everything. But you had a theory that you believe that the Arkham Knight is...
Yeah, so I have... a theory, and I want to go ahead and fill in a little bit of the gaps here on this issue first. Some of the leftover of that day bomb, which they were calling it, or the light bomb or whatever, some of it was in the river, and so that's why Damian went out and was trying to recover it. That's why he got captured. But he was able to get himself free and find a shaft where he was able to, you know, get up or whatever, and that's where, you know, he meets up with the Arkham Knight. You see all these villains, and he says, well, you know what? He says, well, Robin, it seems like I need to try harder to convince you to join me. And then he lifts up his helmet, and you see only the back part of his head. And so I had this theory. And it's a little unorthodox. It's kind of out there, but just stick with me, guys. So I posted this picture of the Arkham Knight, and then I put in a second picture of Rick Grayson. And the reason why I say this is because in the Nightwing series right now, he is technically a Nightwing, but he works with a group of police officers, of rogue police officers.
Yeah.
But they still abide by the law. They're still a police officer by day and then Nightwings by night. And then when I had heard last, when Dan Jurgens is getting onto the book with last issue, and for this whole Year of the Villain, it looks like the Court of Owls is getting involved in that story. Now, I just recently read the Batman New 52, the entire run, and Dick Grayson was originally supposed to be recruited into the Court of Owls.
Yes, like the Pledge.
The Pledge, exactly.
Yeah.
And so now that Rick Grayson doesn't have any memory of any of his time as Nightwing, his influences of Bruce and Batman are completely gone. I think the Court of Owls is going to attempt to take him back. They're going to mold him, whether he likes it or not. And quite possibly, they're going to make him into the Arkham Knight.
Okay. I can see that now. Because, yes, I mean, it's been a while since I've read the New 52, but I, right when you were talking about Court of Owls, I'm like, dude, the freaking Pledge, man. This is, so that makes sense. But the reason why I was kind of buying the idea that that might be the case anyways is because no one in the Bat family has a relationship with Damian like Dick does.
Yep.
So, although this is not the, you know, Dick Grayson that we all know and love and everybody wants back, especially you. I mean, based on the fact that this is Damian, I kind of believe that that's who it is. And I believe that, whoa, what an awesome callback. I guess it really helps with you since you just read the book, the New 52 stuff. But man, what a great callback that would be, that people would be like, no, remember this, like go back to Batman, blah, blah, blah.
And
New 52.
I think that it would be, like, for me, like you said, it would be heart-wrenching to see one of, or my favorite Bat family character to be turned into a villain, but his way back to Dick Grayson Nightwing would be so much better. Like, just learning that he,
yeah,
that rise to becoming a hero again, like, that would be cool.
And this guy saying that, and he doesn't even like Heroes in Crisis, Jesus. Anyways, but then, you know, it kind of made, because, I mean, wasn't it, no, it wasn't this past issue, because this is, we had Naked Bane. So it must have been the one before where you had, like, Tom, no, I'm lying. The Batman Who Laughs, and you have Scott Snyder. Now this was Dick Grayson being Robin instead, and he was kind of, like, saying, like, how Bruce sees Dick. But it was kind of like the callback to the Black Mirror. So I kind of feel like all these little, and then also you never know, because, you know, Detective Comics 1000, you had the, like, the Tom King story that you saw Dick Grayson with the long hair and the Nightwing suit back. Again, we don't know where that is, but remember how I was kind of squashing your dream? I don't know. I mean, I know you want this to happen, but I feel like this is a legit, you have a legit theory. Like, this is a good threat.
It would probably be the first time I was right. I'm not saying that I am, for sure. It's just something that I threw out there. Because I think it was Rob from our Slack chat as well. He posted something on Twitter, I want to say like 3 weeks ago. And it was like, you either live you live long enough to, what's the saying again from The Dark Knight?
Rather,
you either die the hero or live long enough to see yourself become the villain. And what it was a picture of Nightwing getting shot in the head, a picture of Rick Grayson with his scar. It was the solicitation of the picture of the Court of Owl, like the Talon looking over Rick Grayson, and then it had Capullo's Year of the Villain cover, and it had one of the Talons. So it was like the almost the evolution of how
so good
Dick Grayson might become a Talon, and that's terrifying to think. But it might be true. It might show that he became a Talon first, but the Court of Owls may have different plans for Gotham. And because the Court of Owls have tried to take over Gotham before, they want to try something else. And so giving him the knight outfit and taking a different approach would be really, really cool.
Rob reads comics, everyone. Follow him on Twitter.
Yes. Really, really cool guy. Really great conversation starter on Twitter. A lot of really cool threads. So go follow him. He also is a contributor on our website, comicbooklegion.com.
So, boom. Love it. Nice little plug there.
Yes. So the one book we've been waiting for.
Get in your feelings, man. Tell me your feelings.
I like this book. Don't think that I don't like this book.
Liar.
I like this book. It's hard to see where Tom King is wanting to take, or what Tom King is wanting out of this event. not necessarily what he wants out of these characters, but what he wants to spin out of this event into the DC universe. So let me first say, this book, you know, as much as I like Clayman's art, Mitch was great on this issue. Absolutely love it.
I mean, Mitch Gerards, he has... I remember I was listening to a podcast that he did, man. I saw this was like during Sheriff of Babylon. I think this was like before Rebirth. And he was like on, I think it was like iFanboy. And I just kind of... I mean, like, I've never listened to, like, the... I think I've listened once to, like, Word Balloon. Like, I think you mentioned their podcast once before.
Uh-huh.
And so sometimes, like, when I want to know about these characters, I try to find where I can have, like, hear interviews about them. And I remember the interviewee was asking Mitch, how do you nail these facial expressions? Because he conveys, like, the way that he conveyed everything that happened in this issue with Wally, like, how do you do it? And he goes, honestly, it's actually really hard for me to be able to draw facial expressions. That actually what I have to do is I have to take, like, selfies of myself and convey that message, so then I can view the image of that I'm trying to convey and then kind of put that into the paper, like the character that he's drawing. And I was like, oh man, that's kind of cool.
That's kind of intense.
Yeah, that's a process. So I was like, there's, ever since I read that, and then I'm kind of like reading all his stuff because I love Sheriff of Babylon, which was for me an awesome introduction to who he is. And then now seeing the stuff that he's been doing with King, I was like, dude, like everything he's done, it's kind of like he literally lives what he's drawing, which I thought was, it's really interesting. I know that has nothing to do with the book, but since you were complimenting his art, I kind of just wanted to give that little behind the scene, you know, inside baseball kind of look into it. But yeah, go ahead. Sorry.
So, and if you haven't noticed by this, you know, entire podcast or the last five episodes, this is a spoiler filled episode, and this is a big event. So if you haven't read this book in particular, go read it now and then come back to us. I'm giving you 5 seconds. Ready? 1, 2, 5. Okay, so this is where we learn everything we need to learn about who killed everybody in the sanctuary.
Yes.
So we start off with Wally in his confessional. The one thing that you should notice immediately in these three panels is the giant blood splatter all over the back.
Yep.
If that doesn't question, like, what is going on, then you need to check yourself into Sanctuary. But this is...
The puddlers!
I know. This is really internal dialogue heavy, and not necessarily internal dialogue, because he's giving this confessional. And, you know, we see throughout this entire thing about how each of these other characters were dealing with their situations inside Sanctuary. Wally did not believe that everyone was hurting as much as him, or hurting at all. And I just want to say this now, because this is truly, you know, and this is why I do actually enjoy this book. Tom King hit so hard on mental stability and mental health.
Yes.
You know, I just heard it recently whenever I went to go see this concert yesterday. We were talking about it before we started recording. The main artist, you know, when he was writing these songs for the concert that I went to, he said, it's okay to feel sad. You know, and that's one thing that we've kind of learned in the years of 2019, 2018, you know, recently, is mental illness is not something to be ashamed of. It's something that, you know, you should, you know, let known, and so that you can take care of it. People can help you, you know. And so Wally does probably the worst thing anybody could do. He takes all of these files of the confessionals, and everybody says, oh, well, they're all deleted immediately. Well, when a speedster has the ability to time travel and be faster than freaking Google Fiber.
Yeah.
That isn't a problem. So he collects all of the data for every confessional ever made at Sanctuary. And he watches it basically all at once. And I don't know about you, if you watch a sad movie or you listen to a sad song, that hits you. Like, yes. Right in the gut, right in the feels. And while
that's how I felt watching Punisher.
Exactly.
Especially like the first couple of episodes, I'm like, my God, I'm like, babe, can we go out? Let's go to a theme park. I need to be happy.
Exactly. 'Cause
this is like...
Now, that's how you would feel, because at that moment, you're feeling sad, but in your life right now, I'm not just assuming, you know, your life for you, but you're not dealing with something that on the level of Wally is dealing with. Wally, yeah. For one, has lost basically 15 years of his life and his family.
Mm-hmm.
And so, on top of that, learning how the world sucks, basically, he mentally couldn't take it. And yeah. he tells the confessional, you know, being the fastest man alive is cool.
A blessing and a curse, yeah.
But it's also a curse. It's such a heavy burden and so much power. And he, for that split second, he let it go. And this splash page hurt me so bad. He is the killer. Now, let me say, it wasn't on purpose, clearly. This is something that everybody assumed, but everybody didn't want. And I'll tell you, that is why we will see most of the negative reactions to this book.
Yeah.
Because, unfortunately, I wouldn't say it was predictable, but it was something that from the very beginning of what we saw in DC Rebirth number 1 to where we're kind of seeing the possible conclusion of Wally West's story is completely heartbreaking. And
now, do you see it as, cuz for example, this is the stuff that, for example, you're talking about the Lowe's with Rick Grayson and how great it's going to be in terms of when he gets to Nightwing and how great it's going to be. You're seeing Wally being mentioned in Doomsday Clock. Doomsday Clock is something that is pretty much, from what all we know, I mean, I don't know if all these delays are changing stories, but you heard from Lex Luthor's mouth, do you know Wally West? Like, have you heard the name Wally West? Like, mm-hmm. I feel like there's more to it, and that's where his rise is going to be.
Now, of course, we can't assume what, you know, DC has planned. I would love to say, oh yeah, Doomsday Clock will fix everything. Now, there has been plenty of fluff on the internet saying that Doomsday Clock was supposed to be the conclusion of Rebirth and everything was going to be rainbows and sunshine after that. But with these delays, it's hard for us fans to really believe that now. With all the stuff that is happening in Heroes in Crisis. But I would love to be proven wrong. I would absolutely love it.
Okay, so you didn't want to see Wally, which I understand because of what Wally represents to pretty much everyone. But now, considering what Rebirth, I mean, New 52, pretty much with this new reboot, it took all that away from him.
Mm-hmm.
Rebirth comes back. Sure, he has these thoughts. I mean, he didn't have it of his children until Zoom told him about it on Flash Wars. But, I mean, he lost the love of his life. Now, this was something that I was talking to Jim over at the Weird Science DC Comics podcast. Mm-hmm. And I was like, okay, he mentions to me, which, I mean, it is understandable based on how you are as a reader. So the way that he is as a reader is if I go by what is shown on the book. So for me, I'm like, dude, with you being telling you that, you know, you had these kids. Okay, if you didn't or not, I mean, you know that with all this time travel stuff, you did have them, but now everything has changed. So now you have been introduced to these memories. Then the love of your life, who is pretty much your rock and your foundation, look at, yes, it's Elseworld, but look at Injustice with Superman, and all he did was lose Lois. Well, he's lost. I mean, yes, Linda is not dead, but Linda does not know him, does not want anything to do with him. But he mentions to me, well, but he came to terms with that in Titans. I'm like, in life, how many times do we come into terms with something, but all we need is one thing to remind us of everything that we have lost?
All it takes is one.
We don't need... See, so the kind of reader that I am, yes, there's continuity, little things, some things might not make sense. I don't really care about that stuff. I'm going by, like, the story, what's the message that I'm getting from the story that I'm reading.
Mm-hmm.
So when I see that, I can totally see and yes, it's an accident, but it's one of those that I feel that it's plausible. And honestly, I feel like Wally is the only one that has gone through so much since the New 52 that it kind of makes sense for him to be the one that goes through this. Now, I know it's not what they want to hear because of everything about Wally and what he stood for by animated series from... Since Barry's been dead since Crisis on Infinite Earths, I get that. But again, this character can't be the same all the time. Because then it's just, oh, this is just expected.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like when you're doing a great job at work and no one compliments you anymore. You want to know why you're not being complimented. No, that just means you're consistent.
Yeah.
But then it's like you're complaining about not being praised. I mean, it's like one of these things is like, I don't want the same thing all the time with Wally. I don't want Wally to be seen always at the same thing, because then honestly there's no growth. Then he's going to be where other people complain about other characters that they're boring. If your story's going to be the same, it's going to be boring to me. So I like that there is a progression to Wally. Yes, right now he is at the worst of his worst, but to me I feel that him being at his worst of the worst, it's only going to get redeemed later on.
Yeah.
And I'm hoping that is by what Geoff Johns is doing. I know Geoff Johns loves Wally West. So I feel that there's more to it, and we just kind of... I think that we're just in Wally West. We're in that Batman 50. Where right now it's... You know, maybe the Batman 50 with Wally has been a little longer, but that's just where we're at.
I mean, it doesn't help that Batman 50 and Heroes in Crisis number 8 are both written by Tom King, but...
Well, I mean, yeah, I get... But it's like, the other thing you have to remember is, like, Tom King wanted to tell the story, and DC told him what characters he can use.
Oh, well, yeah, definitely. And let me, reiterate and remind everybody, Tom King, when he first told the world on Twitter what this story was going to be about, he said, hey, this is going to be about real life. This is going to be about... taking, you know, the idea of something so sacred and safe for people that you love, putting it in there, and then learning that it wasn't so safe. Like, so
yeah.
We should have expected this, and we kind of did. Like I said, it was something that was thrown quite possibly... by, like, the first two issues of Heroes in Crisis, everybody was like, oh, I think Wally's the killer. Oh, how crazy would that be if Wally was the killer? And it shows here. Now, in this book, you know, when we learn that he killed everybody, it shows exactly what he did to set everything up. He raced through the entire fields where everybody's, you know, because... in that splash page, we see everybody go flying. And in that split second, he put Harley back in her simulation and he put Booster back in his and tricked them into seeing each other kill him.
Like, that kind of... Those were, I would say, like, those were some of the more of the weirder stuff. Like, the, un-Wally kind of choices.
Yes. See, and, but going back to mental health and not being in his right mind, he felt, hey, you know what? This is something very bad. I need to fix it in a way that it doesn't look like nothing ever happened, because clearly people are dead.
Yeah.
So he set up the perfect crime scene, basically. And he goes forward in time, and that's where you see where we were with the last issue. With Ivy, with Wally. And Wally says, hey, is there anything else that I need to do? He says, yes, there's a rose in the Gotham River. Plant it here, and you'll be good. Now, that's the detail that I want to hold on to for a quick second. What he does is he takes Wally from where we were last issue, and he throws him into back in time and kills him right where Wally, I mean, right where Roy was. And then he is placed himself basically, like he is still stuck 5 days in the past, and he'll go through those 5 days, he'll plant the flower, and then he will die when the next Wally comes and gets him.
Yeah.
We are in a paradox loop.
Mm-hmm.
Now.
Yeah.
Now, if this story is to move forward, that paradox has to stop.
Yeah.
And Kevin, I love Kevin. He is one of the most, what's the word? Enthusiastic writers that we have. And that's not a bad thing. You know, whenever I read this book, I went to the spoiler chat and said, meh. And then Kevin just brought all of this life into the spoiler chat, and it made me happy. I really love what his ideas are and what his theories are. And it's the only problem that I have is if, because one of the theories is, oh, you know, eventually one of these Wallys will feel wrong about what he's doing, and that'll stop the cycle, and he'll go back in time to stop everything. I have one problem with that. Do you know how many readers would be so upset that this book erased itself? And
well, I mean, I feel like those are, it's a very Tom King thing to do. I mean, with a lot of the things that we've seen, it's either he makes you fall in love with something just to tear it down and he rips your soul apart, kind of like what he did with Vision. It's kind of along the lines where it's like, dude, did Mr. Miracle even happen? I mean, it's like, it doesn't, these kind of, I feel like, you kind of know the tropes, the themes that writers kind of go for. Like, what are their fortes?
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like this is something that possibly was something that they had in continuity. It created content for other stories. And, I mean, they didn't do a great job, DC, in terms of actually setting up Heroes in Crisis. I felt like in a lot of books, they just threw the name Sanctuary just so they can say it. And it's like, oh, Heroes in Crisis tie-in, whatever.
Yeah.
But I feel that those kind of things, I mean, in a way, wouldn't people actually be happy if it just erased itself?
Oh, no.
Because then in reality, then there's nothing to complain about.
People would be happy that a lot of their characters lived. And, you know, one of the biggest fandoms being Poison Ivy, you know, they got their character back. They're happy.
Yeah.
But a lot of people would be happy that Roy is back. I'd be happy that Roy is back.
Yeah,
I legitimately got teary-eyed and almost shed a tear on that Green Arrow tie-in.
Dude, that was one of the saddest things. I was like, golly, this is like that amazing Spider-Man comic after like 9/11 when you're seeing like even like Doom crying.
Yeah, I will say Julie and Shauna Benson wrote a hell of a comic with that funeral.
Yes.
But the way I'm seeing it is it erased itself. But I still have 9 issues in these boxes behind me.
Well, I mean, but then again, it depends on what you're going for, because I think that nowadays it's all about having that conversation. So it's really about what conversation are you trying to have? Are you trying to have, yes, it's comic books. Are you trying to have the comic book conversation, or are you just going to completely forget about all the importance in terms of a personal story for him, in terms of what you just said in the beginning of this comic, which is mental health and just mental awareness?
Mm-hmm.
I think like that's the overarching, and I think that's what this story was about. And it's not about all the other stuff, but it just so happens that it's in a comic book medium. So,
and I think for me,
it's still, yeah, but for me, it's like, I'll always think of this book. Let's just say it did erase itself. Then for me, it kind of just feels like an Elseworld book, because it didn't affect anything in the long run. But I felt I read a very personal book. I feel that in terms of this, it kind of reminds me. I mean, I've mentioned this on like Nation of Nerds when we were doing the show, that working in ministry, a lot of these characteristics that you see Wally go through, the way that you see some of these characters speak, yeah, it doesn't sound like them because this is not a normal situation.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing characters in a very vulnerable state. And I mean, I've seen that. I've seen people that come from overseas after, you know, doing the service, and they're not like my best friend. Like, I can't even recognize who he is.
Yeah.
Like, because it's just, they're different. And so for me, I think that maybe this story was meant for us, the uninitiated, to know about what this world is. But maybe it's also really meant for, maybe this is really therapeutic for King. Maybe this is for all those people that have gone through what he's going through. This is therapeutic for them as well, because they can kind of feel like, man, even like these superheroes, even though it's made believe, I mean, so many people find solace in superheroes and they find inspiration. So I feel like this might not necessarily be for us, and I'm okay with that, because there's a gazillion of comics that I can read that are for me.
Yeah.
So that's why I get what you mean, that I'm like, dude, but I spent $50 on this.
Yeah.
I get that. But I feel that if we go beyond the mundane, which is comic book continuity, and we look at what I believe what this really was, I think that this was a beautiful, tragic, it's all of that together, but that's really like what it is for me. Yeah. For me,
and I think one of the things, like you were saying, you know, it's the story about mental health that just so happens to be inside the comic book realm. One of the biggest things that I always had conversations about whenever I was in the comic shop that I worked at was consequences. If there was a giant story and there was zero consequences, what was the point of the story? Was one of the big things that, you know, customers would come in and talk to me about. And we would have that conversation. Oh, well, you know, it taught this person this. And but then they're like, yeah, but at the end, nothing really happened other than that teaching. And yeah. I was like, oh, well, I guess you're right. You know, unfortunately, nothing exponential happened, but you know, and that's what I feel like, because this is a crisis. You know, DC has their crisis, and Marvel has their Secret Wars and their Civil Wars,
yeah,
and all this. So for a crisis book to not have consequences, it does like put a damper on what I spent money on or what I read. But I do understand, you know, because
I mean, again, we still need to, there's still one more book, so we still need to see how this unravels.
Yeah,
because maybe the way that it does close. But for me, I do agree in terms of concept. I love knowing that there are stakes.
Mm-hmm.
But for some reason, I mean, I don't know, I just can't see this being something where there won't be any kind of consequence, or at least some sort of a remembrance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I feel like that will be there, because then with all these other little, you know, secrets in terms of like, why is Wally potentially going to be in a Suicide Squad book? Or again, I don't do solicits, so I don't know like mm-hmm. what's going on with Suicide Squad, or just because I guess Azzarello's taken over. But I mean, I don't know. I guess I would have to see the thing, and maybe the way that he decides to end this once and for all will kind of maybe make me more on your side in terms of, like, you know, the money aspect, in terms of, like, you know, like a story, there needs to be some kind of con. If not, if everything just erases, okay, maybe. But at the moment right now, like, that's not, at least for me, that's just not where my focus goes. I don't go towards the minor details that might contradict what happened in issue two. Like those little small things, I don't really pay attention to that. I kind of just go by, what is the story that you're actually trying to tell me in this specific issue? And mm-hmm. I go by that. Because if I go through all the other stuff, then I feel like I'm going to nitpick everything and then I'll just hate everything. Yeah. So I try to enjoy this for what it is and go by that. And, you know, it's just my formula. But it's not saying that I don't agree with what you're saying, because normally I do. I just feel like with this specific one, I kind of just felt like this was just a story on, you know, you get, like, in basketball, you got, like, the Royce White, you got, what was it, Kevin Love. You just got these characters now they're going to, like, the Times or, like, Atlantic or something, and they're just saying kind of, like, their story of how they've dealt with this in the kind of world that they're in. And I kind of feel like, I don't know, I feel like this is just Tom King's way of internalizing his thoughts, and he's just putting it into paper. So I kind of find it, I don't know, I find this story like a diary, like a journal. And I'm looking at Wally, but I'm really looking at Tom.
No.
That's kind of my way of reading it.
True.
So that's why I liked it. I mean, I sure, you know, like him narrating absolutely everything, it felt like it was literally going like a million miles an hour with all the little steps. But it's because there's been so many slow issues in between that, you know, now they kind of crammed everything into one issue. That, okay, I kind of had an issue with.
Mm-hmm.
Like, because I don't always like, even though, yes, he was pretty much talking to Lois while you're hearing his confession, but it just feels like a narration. And I don't like to be, like, just told what I'm seeing all the time. So that part, okay, like, if we go into that, yeah, that would bother me. But in terms of the story and stuff like that, overall, I'm a fan. I'm still a fan.
Yeah, and, you know, that, you know, like you said, he is talking to Lois. That's how it ends.
Yeah.
And, you know, he tells Lois at the very end, it took him 5 days to really muster up the courage, or, you know, to really think about what he did to tell her the truth. And it is a little bit on the nose, because, like, in the, I think it was, like, issue two, you learn that these things were getting leaked. But it wasn't originally to Lois, so he had to learn that they were mm-hmm. being, you know, given to Lois later.
Yeah.
And so that's why he's able to talk to her straightforward. Excuse me. And so, I don't know. I like I said, the story of mental illness is definitely something to still talk about, because I'm sure it's not just going to, hey, you know, you're cured of mental illness in 1 month. But
yeah.
But I'm sure, you know, everybody right now is assuming that he's going to be thrown into the Suicide Squad. I don't know if I would like that either. To mock
that. Okay. That makes a little, that's a little, I mean, cause we know what the Suicide Squad is.
Yeah.
So that's, I'm with you in regards to what this event can potentially do to then further on. But then I'm saying, I feel like if it erases itself, why would he be in the Suicide Squad?
Yeah, exactly.
So that's why I'm like, I'd rather just let's see how the next issue is. And depending on how that goes, because, for example, like one of the things that bothered me about Metal was, yeah, Metal was like a really big event, but I felt like Metal was really just to introduce New Age of Heroes, which to me has been an utter failure. And I'm like, dude, this has just been a huge commercial for a new line that DC wants to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that bothers the hell out of me. So that was something that I always had with Metal that kind of pissed me off. Yeah, sure, it had the moments that you're still seeing all the little Easter eggs nowadays, but I felt like that's initially something I hate when that gets thrown in. Like, that just bothers me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm hoping that this something that was meant to be so personal doesn't turn into something like that. But I'm pretty sure it is, which would suck. Because that's just kind of like where comics is now.
Well, with that, I just want to say,
I need to watch an episode of The Office. I need to laugh.
Well, one thing that I just now remembered is this is the last week of the month. Next week, we are going to announce our winner for the contest. Oh. So we still need to do a question for this episode, so that way we can see all the answers. And then on, I guess it would be May 1st, would be our next recording. We will be able to, I think it's May 1st. Hold on. It is May 1st. May 1st is going to be on a Wednesday. So we can see who answered all the questions and give that winner out there. But for a question
I had a question if you didn't have one, just in case.
Well, that's what I was going to say. And let me just say before we ask the question, I want to thank everybody who participated in the Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse giveaway. I had a lot of fun with that. I am wanting to do more giveaways like that outside of the podcast, but on our Twitter. That's where we're most active. But I would really appreciate it, guys, if y'all answer these questions. So that way we can see who's listening to the very end, or at least who is interacting. We love to interact with you guys. We love to talk. You know, that's why we have a podcast. So whether it be here on the Twitter posts or in an email or however, you know, talk to us. We, like I said, we love to talk. So, Mark, what is your question for this week?
So my question, this is in honor of Dial H.
Sweet.
You come across the phone. You pick up the phone. What is your name and what is your secret origin?
That would be awesome. And now let me say this. Let me say this. And I want to reiterate this right now because we can get into a lot of trouble with this. Do not, I repeat, do not tag Sam Humphries. Do not tag Bendis. Do not tag Wonder Comics.
Yes, please don't do that.
Please do not do that. I know that there's a lot of writers right now that are kind of having to block a whole bunch of people because they continue to write them ideas for the books that they're writing. They cannot do that. I was just recently listening to a Bendis conversation about Dial H. Back in the day, they had had these postcards inside the Dial H books where you could create your own character and they would be put into a drawing to be put into the book. And the only thing that you would win is the satisfaction of saying, hey, that's the character I made. Nowadays, because of legalities and how everybody wants their cut, you know, in, you know, the money in comic business, they can't do that now, of course. So I would definitely love to see what your hero would be, what their secret origin is. So that would be
really
cool.
Yeah, just don't tag them. I mean, if anything, if you haven't seen anything in the past couple of months, especially with like a Donny Cates or something like that, like just don't do it. Like, they can't legally do it because then if your idea comes anywhere near close to what they were doing, then there's always, so let's just have fun with it. Let's keep it within our circles, because it's just, that's what this is. This is just you guys answering something so that you guys could potentially win something. And also, if you've ever thought of wanting to write reviews on comics or talk in movies or something like that, I mean, there are incentives for joining the website. Not only do you get to read comics a little earlier, which is always cool, but for example, like within our team, Clay and myself, we actually had a giveaway for our writers, like as a thank you for contributing. You know, we do these little random giveaways where
the writer appreciation,
Yeah, like a writer appreciation, absolutely. Or contributor appreciation, because, for example, this one, when we did our random number, Chris, who's actually panels and hoodies, he is our editor, and he edits all the reviews, and the number landed on him, and he won Wonder Woman Volume 1, The Lies, from Rebirth, which is Greg Rucka, Liam Sharp, So that's where we're at right now, and it's been awesome. So besides that, if that's not an incentive enough to try to, you know, come aboard to Comic Book Legion, you can reach us at CB_Legion, which is our Twitter page. You can reach me personally at Mark Fosses. And where can they find you, Clay?
You can always find me at Fanboy Clay or my show Fanboy Comics Podcast at Fanboy Comics Pod.
Sweet. So with that being said, I don't know if we got anything else to talk about. I don't.
Nope.
I've talked enough. I'm tired.
I know. Heroes in Crisis wears you out.
Screw you, man. Awesome. All right. So then we will talk to you guys next week.
Cheers. All right. See you later, man.